Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the third installment of the TeamLiquid.net StarCraft II Beta Podcast. I am Sean, Day9 Plot, and as always, I am greeted here by my friend Tristan. Say hello, Tristan.
Hey, everyone.
As you know, my friend Tristan has been playing under the ID Mantra on StarCraft II Beta, and he's been tearing it up in Division 5, is that right? Or did they just recently split him up into new divisions?
I'm still in Division 5. They did add like a ton of gold players. One of my other friends who was in the gold league just got sort of knocked up into one of the new platinum divisions, like 13 or something.
Yeah, because like I don't know how they're going about creating the new ones, but I really want to hear why they split us up into these different divisions. And I mean, I know it's, you know, gold versus platinum. I can understand being dumped in gold, so you get about that same level of competition. But I'm still curious why we're all put into different divisions. And then we're still randomly paired against each other every so often.
Yeah. I definitely think it merits an explanation. I can certainly sort of guess at some of the reasons they might be thinking about, but I would personally very much like sort of a developer statement or ladder manager statement or whoever the heck does it, just in terms of what they're trying to do, why they think their system accomplishes that, and, you know, just to get that perspective.
And in other words, this is a thinly veiled attempt to just let all of you know that we're both in the Platinum Division. So, ha! Take that on top of the world. And in other StarCraft II news right now, the TeamLiquid.net Liquibition is coming up. The first ever StarCraft II Liquibition. It's going to be between Rhett and Infernal on March 13th. And yours truly, Day 9, will be streaming and commenting on the game. So that should be pretty awesome. I sincerely hope. I don't know what's going on in the European ladders. And that's I think, is like one of the coolest ideas, that people in Europe could be developing their own styles and way of playing, and then the people here on the American server could be doing their own stuff. Because did you see... Oh, you had to have seen White Raw versus Kaz. Actually, did we watch that one together?
Yeah.
Dude, White Raw just like straight up Nexus on 16, no problem. Then
that was a brilliant build order.
Yeah, and then like into 2-gate and into Forge and proceeds to almost lose to a Roach Rush. And then gets like 9 Phoenixes and lifts up every single one of Kaz's drones individually to kill it.
It's pretty sweet.
It's like so weird seeing worker harass in StarCraft 2 that way, because in StarCraft 1, it's like a storm drop. It's just like, fuck all of your workers right now, and it kills all of them. But in StarCraft 2, it's like, okay, you're going to die, and then you're going to die. It's just kind of weird, you know? It's not quite, it doesn't sit well with me. I want a lot of stuff exploding.
Yeah.
And I suppose what we have to talk about right off the bat is the fact that the newest patch has just come out. I mean, I don't know if you have anything to say about this newest patch, but, I mean, it seems pretty standard to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much to talk about. They made a pretty reasonable change of saying, hey, Terran upgrades get the same build time as the other races' upgrades, which, I mean, strikes me as pretty fair. And then they made this tiny little nerf to Zealots, which, I mean, I guess I didn't personally feel Zealots were overpowering anything, but it's also such a small change. It's really quite difficult for me to sort of attempt to guess how that's going to play out.
Yeah, I mean, like, most people in the forums are just like, roaches need to stop existing, cut their hit points in half or something. You'll never see anyone be like, if only roaches just had 5 less hit points, I'd be satisfied. Just 5 more hit points, Blizzard. And there they are, Blizzard's dropping the Zealot shield capacity from 60 to 50 in this most recent patch, which, I don't know. I mean, part of me feels like it has less to do with a rush and more to do with some sort of mid or late game push that... You could get a whole bunch of Zealots because you're spending all your gas elsewhere, so you may as well get a Zealot. Maybe they were just like a little bit too strong.
Yeah, they may have also been looking at sort of the Zealot versus Zergling dynamic and decided that was slightly too much in favor of the Zealots.
Point. Well, that's bullshit, because I lost a Zergish Protoss to my brother where he went mass Zergling and I Zealot rushed and he just like killed my Zealots, so I'm pretty bummed out about that, so... I mean, it's just like every new patch is just like, we want Zealots to be weaker. We want Zealot rushes to be worse. Like, up in the build time of the gateway earlier on. Oh, and that's actually something that I suppose we should mention. Our last podcast was recorded in like a 6-hour window where patch 1 had just come out, but patch 2 hadn't come out. So like 3 hours after we released the podcast, it was immediately obsolete. So I guess we should talk a little bit about like that second patch, because that was pretty significant. We also have, you know, an entire week's worth of experience to blab on about it. But I mean, what do you think was like the biggest change that happened in that last patch that like affected you most?
So the one that's affected me most is the Banshee change. I was already trying to play with Banshees prior to that, but the fact that you can now get Cloak without having to build the expensive Fusion Core is pretty sweet. So I've definitely been experimenting with Banshees quite a bit in all three matchups as Terran. I play random, so I mean, I don't get quite as many games in with Terran as I might like, so my sample size is not immense in this case. But I've been pretty happy. They're very powerful units. They're actually, you know, they're sort of the classical glass cannon. They do a ton of damage, but they actually go down quite quickly, too. But, you know, just the mobility, having Cloak, which forces the player to always sort of have some sort of detection available, can definitely allow you to sort of mold the game flow in your favor. And frankly, if they're not prepared for it, you'll just win immediately anyway.
Yeah, and, you know, that's... Well, one thing that I always have said about patches is that no matter what they do to the units, no matter what change they make, it'll always just inspire you to build that unit. You know, like, even if they, like, nerfed Vikings or something like that, I'd be like, huh, I guess I'm going to go try to build some Vikings, and especially with this Banshee adjustment, you know. Why don't I just go build Banshees? And, I mean, honestly, I'm keeping a list right now of all my stupid-ass losses, and I've had one of those, like, just didn't build anti-air and, like, instantly died to Mutalisks. So, you know, no doubt in my mind I'm going to be doing that sort of stuff with Banshees at some point here, too.
I need a very long notebook for my stupid-ass losses.
Actually, I bought a notebook for, like, it's like my StarCraft II notebook. I think everyone should have a StarCraft II notebook. Because, I mean, after every single game, there's always something where you're like, oh, man, I really got to do blank. And then, like, you know, you go to class, you come back, and you've completely forgotten what it was you wanted to do. I mean, that's a big experience I had whenever I would take a break in StarCraft 1, if, it, you know, classes were too hard or something like that, or if I was just low on time. I would leave, and I would come back, and I would start practicing again, and then I would have a dumb loss, and I would be like, oh, yeah, I needed to have my Overlord positioned here, so that way I could see when his units moved in there, and the fact that I, like, didn't have a reference sheet, just like, hey, Sean, when coming back to Brood War, make sure you don't be an idiot in the following ways, and I'm like, oh, wow, I really was retarded in the past.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, the huge thing for me when I was playing IC Cup was, like, you know, there are 90 million ways to lose in the first 5 minutes on Destination.
Yeah! Oh my god!
I had to lose to all of them at least once every time I started playing.
I know, until you're, like, checking for hidden hatches in your main as Protoss and shit. You're just like, there's a chance! It can happen.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just played, like, the most embarrassing game of StarCraft 2, where, like, I had actually recently been watching a lot of Cal Gomu's replays, and I also did I featured him in one of the Day 9 dailies, just talking about why he's a huge baller, and I was trying to mimic one of the builds of his that I'd seen on Desert Oasis, and it was this really aggressive opening build, and, you know, I should have at least thought a little bit beforehand of, like, it's not a good idea to rush on a map where you're on opposite ends and the ramps face away from each other. I mean, it's just, like, such a fucking huge map. So I rushed, and right when I get there with the rush, he just has Mutalisks and kills me, and I'm like, and I just, like, immediately die, and I'm like, oh no! I'm, like, typing to him, trying to be all friendly in chat. I'm like, LOL, I can't believe I forgot air, I forgot turrets, and he just, like, doesn't say anything, and I'm like, alright, GG, and instantly he's like, GG. I'm like, oh god, I'm making an ass out of myself, so. So that's why I have a notebook. It's just, like, too emotionally distressing for me. You know, in the last patch, I was pretty blown away by how much they just hated on that mothership, man.
Yeah, that was pretty. Crazy changes.
I mean, I didn't realize that the mothership had broken the original patch, but it sure sounds like it. They upped the build time, upped the food cost time, decreased the number of shots it fires, dropped the health, the shields, dropped the unit acceleration, everything. Just, like, killed it. Oh, they also removed a bunch of its abilities. Or was that in the first patch?
That was the prior patch.
Oh, yeah.
Between patches 1 and 2, the mothership got pretty much gutted, and I shedded several tears as the mothership rush was no longer viable.
No longer my standard.
Like this was, a direct act of retribution on Blizzard for me Mothership rushing and enjoying it.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, how are you going to hold off a Roach Rush? Oh, Motherships is my standard, you know?
Don't have it's just so rush. Awesome.
I know. I mean, how awesome is that? That's like stopping Goon Rushes with Battleship Rushes in StarCraft 1.
I would just like to say, you know that game where Artosis got Mothership rushed by KHB?
Oh, I'm glad you brought it up.
And he says, what?
Yeah.
I've seen that little animated GIF of that moment as a signature in three separate forums, two of which are not StarCraft forums.
Wait, which forums?
2+2 poker forums and the Fires of Heaven Guild World of Warcraft forums.
Oh, man. Artosis, what a way to be immortalized, right? How he will always be remembered. I mean, because that's one thing I always wonder, is that, like, I'm a StarCraft player now, and I have been for 12 years, and it's, like, the centerpiece of my life. But what's it going to be like when I'm 30? Is, like, my wife and kids going to make fun of me for it, you know? What if I'm, like, 40, you know, like, come on, son, you know, why don't you play StarCraft 2 with your old pa? And he's like, shut up, Dad, you're a newbie. And I, like, cry. Why my son doesn't love me and shit.
I feel like you can draw inspiration from White Ra, who I believe has a family.
Oh, yeah, who I believe is 40.
Still complete ass with StarCraft 1.
Oh, man, that's, like, so awesome. You know, I mean, anytime you get StarCraft winnings when you're, like, our age, it's like, what are you going to do? It's like, I'm going to party it up with hookers and blow. And he's like, you know, he has a family. He's like, oh, I will buy a new fence to put outside my house because I own a house. And I'm like, you know, living in my first apartment. What a hero, man. I want to grow up and be like White Raw. But of course, Artosis, you know, even when he has like arthritis and we're all shuffling around in an old folks home, I'd be like, go lose to a Mothership Russ, you fucking geriatric, you know? Oh, man. And, you know, it's kind of funny because in every single patch, they do something to hurt Protoss just a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely been the trend so far.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Chrono Boost and everything. I'm actually trying to scroll through here and just look at some of the other extreme things that they did in the last patch. Oh, they dropped the Overlord, or excuse me, they dropped the Observer speed upgrade costs, which is a hell of a thing, which is great. High Templar got a little bit of a boost, or, they don't have that phase shift anymore, they just have feedback.
I didn't even know phase shift existed until they removed it.
Yeah, I know. Now I want to go back to the original patch and try some phase shift, man. But, like, what was the thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah. So they've been nerfing Protoss a lot, but I'm curious about Terran versus Protoss, which I think is the matchup that traditionally people say is the hardest, but Kaugummu has kind of been convincing me otherwise, just with his out-of-control Marine Marauder, or as we like to call it, a Moron push.
Yeah.
It's just like, murders Protosses, but because he's so good at incorporating those ghosts into the play, where he'll just cast like five EMPs that just ripple across the whole army, and he's just done, you know? He only has
one
or two
pretty sick.
But I mean, do you have any opinions on the matchups? I don't know how many replays of his you've seen.
I mean, I've seen probably 10 of his replays. He definitely makes that matchup look very different than it looks every other time. You see it pretty much. And I mean, when I play it as Protoss, I'm definitely like, yeah, you know, this seems like it's really hard for Terran. And when I play as Terran, I sort of feel the same way. I try to circumvent it by getting Banshees and killing them before they can. I take a little bit of mad glee in watching my Banshees destroy the Colossi.
Yeah, I've seen you take both hands off the keyboard when your Banshees get to his base and just crack your knuckles, you know. But you have like a pile of grapes with like some beautiful women and you're like, more wine with the Banshees, you know. Like.
It is a pretty hedonistic experience.
Oh, yeah, seriously.
Difficult to say not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when Kaugummu plays it, it's just like he has got this like army which seems practically invincible, and then it's like, well, fuck. EMP takes away half of the Protoss army, in a sense. Or like half the health of the entire army. You had Templar with them? Well, they're gonna dance around while the rest of your army dies.
Yeah. I almost wish that EMP were a projectile the same way it was in StarCraft 1, so you could at least wiggle around a little bit and dodge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also just punishing the fact that people clump their units because they can group them all at the same time.
Oh,
I think that's just naturally leading to clumping, which is probably not optimal in most circumstances.
Yeah.
I'm trying to force myself to use multiple hotkeys in later game situations, and my units are, you know, more spread out and disorganized. And although there are times that's going to count against you anytime you're dealing with any sort of AoE damage like Storm or Banelings or Colossi, that spread outness is going to be a major factor. If we can imagine, you know, some amazing god of micro playing like a Marine Marauder force against several Colossi, the difference between those Marines and Marauders in a big clump and the difference between them really well spread out, I mean, the laser could be like hitting two units at a time instead of eight. Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal, right?
That actually makes me think you should probably start hotkeying. I don't mean you, I mean like anyone who's listening. It seems like a good idea to like split everything up into like smaller hotkeys, but then have your whole army hotkey to control zero or some out of the way thing. So that way, you know, you can send your whole army like zero, go here, and then have 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, cool, guys, spread out. Because, I mean, for the most part, I use about 4 to 8 or 9 with all my buildings. I've been using zero a little less because there's no hotkeys nearby it. I mean, I used to do like zero P and stuff for probes and that sort of thing. But now that probes are E and pretty much every other thing in StarCraft 1 is also E, I started using like 4 for my Nexus, but it seems reasonable to just be able to split stuff up into little groups and to have like one big hotkey for an army, which reminds me of that thing that you said that Noni had mentioned, which is to have all your gateways, Nexuses, and Forges all hotkeyed as one group. So that way you can select that control group and just chrono boost the individual portraits instead of having to dash about the screen.
Yeah, I thought that was a great suggestion. I'm going to try to incorporate that into my Protoss play.
Yeah, and I'll incorporate it into my random play, because as you know, I only spawn Protoss whenever I go random. And it's actually, you know, it's starting to like hurt me a little bit, you know? I mean, I distinctly, God, I'm still burning from that loss I had like 20 minutes ago, where he just got Mutalisks, and I'm like trying to be goofy with him, he just killed me. But with Protoss, my literal thought was, I would have had Stalkers by now, and I was, I was like, no, I gotta get good with Terran. I'm actually curious if you've seen any matchups change drastically with the update of the new patches, or whether you're starting to see standard play evolve, because I know I practice a whole bunch against you, and you also, excuse me, just play a whole bunch on the ladder as well.
I mean, I see a pretty big variety. I feel like the patch that it sort of improved all the Terran building times, gave the Terran Marine Marauder timing rush a little bit of a boost.
Yeah. And also you can get Reapers before the Protoss player has a Stalker up, so
yeah, that could be nice. Quite a bit. I don't feel like it's tricky for me to say because I play random, so I just get less of each matchup. I haven't seen any major changes. I've seen more Banshees. I've been using them more. People have been using them more against me.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot more aggressive Terran rushes. I've seen less Protoss rushes, I assume, due to the gateway timing change.
Yeah. I'm still doing also, it.
Yeah. But I haven't seen anything like absolutely, totally change between the patches.
Yeah, well, there's something that's this interesting thing to me that I saw happen a lot in StarCraft 1, which is that people stopped doing strategies not because, not so much because they saw something that their opponent was going to do that made them be like, oh, God, I can't do that, but instead because of trends. So, for instance, a lot of Protoss players at the start of playing StarCraft 2 were just straight-up Colossus rushing Terrans and, you know, just doing that every single game. But now that Terrans are getting Vikings a lot faster, now that they're being better about EMPs, I've noticed a lot of Protosses just sort of, it's not like they get the Colossus and don't rush with it. It's like they just don't get the Colossus at all. And that's what one thing that's been weird to me when laddering is, you know, when I play Terran versus Protoss, in my head I just have this idea that there's going to be Colossi coming inevitably. And for some reason, I haven't seen it very early on for a while. And that's one thing that just fascinates me, because, I mean, like, with StarCraft 1, it's one of the funniest things to watch, you know, an inexperienced player sitting next to you and just suggesting things. Like, I remember in the early times of StarCraft, it was considered really standard to go three hatch Zergling in Zerg vs. Zerg and get a plus one Zergling attack upgrade and try to overwhelm the opponent with Zerglings long before he got any of his Mutalisks up, or about the time that he got his Mutalisks up. And if you didn't kill him, you pretty much went Ling Scourge, and that's the way it worked. Until players suddenly got Mutalisk Micro and that sort of thing. And now it's not like you see anyone going for three-hatch Zergling with plus one against a one-hatching player, but you would still tell someone who's thinking of it not to. You know, you'd just be like, no, you don't do that. It would just lose. And I'm curious how much of that there is in StarCraft II already. That, like, no, don't do that. I mean, even though it doesn't look like he's prepared for it, he'll be prepared for it. And he'll just crush you. Which, personally, for me, I just think it makes for a slightly easier game, because I have less stuff to think about. Because I don't want to have to figure out how to hold off all these different rushes. I just want people to not do it to me.
Yeah. Yeah, there definitely is a sort of a subtle element of groupthink. It's just like, you know, you people identify something as standard, and they gravitate towards it, and they sort of automatically shrug off non-standard stuff. And, like, sometimes it's like, well, there's a good reason for that, but sometimes it's just, you know, something became standard in a sort of arbitrary process.
Yeah.
And we need to sort of be able to get away from that sometimes.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting.
Really think about why we're doing things.
Yeah, it's interesting to think in like, Zerg vs. Terran and StarCraft 1, as the standard, we generally see Medic Marine. Pretty much every Zerg vs. Terran. But it would be interesting if Terran players, at the start of time, just began going mech. If someone just decided that that was standard. Then we have all these players playing these long, drawn-out, turtle-oriented games and just doing tons of vulture harass. And Zerg would be all over the place with total map control. And then when someone suddenly comes out with Medic Marine Science Vessel, it would be considered really unorthodox.
Yeah.
And I'm certain a lot of people would write that off as him just being, oh, that funky, weird player.
Yep, I definitely agree.
We're smart. I mean, some people go to work and they build houses and, you know, build things with their hands. They're like engineers. But we just sit around and think smart things about video games. That's who we are.
It's a tough life. Someone has to do it, right?
I know, right? Thank God we were elected. So actually, I'm curious if you have any favorite players right now. I'm currently a Calgomu fan. I'm an Indian.
I have to jump on the bandwagon. I'm a sheep, but
yeah,
I'll agree with you.
Yeah,
I
really just like, think don't have groupthink. Groupthink's horrible. We love Calgomu.
You know, he just seems to play real solidly. I'm very much attracted to his 90% win percentage.
Oh yeah, isn't that just erotic?
It is. Win percentages are sort of undervalued as such things.
Yeah, I know. People tend to value points a lot, but I just love his ability to not lose. And I mean, likewise, I really like Smuffed and how many games he's played. He's played like over 300 games on the ladder, and I'm almost certain he's playing other games against, you know, just people for fun as well. And he has this relentless attitude to just, you know, not complain about imbalance and just to try to find solutions no matter what's up.
Yeah. I think that's definitely going to benefit him. It's going to help him improve and probably stay among one of the top players early on.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, actually, I have a question for you. How are you playing your Zerg versus Terran? Because that's... I mean, I can tell you what I do, but I have no idea if it's good. And I know you have a little more experience in that matchup than I do.
Mostly my experience in this matchup involves me expanding, thinking I can power a little bit, and then losing to a timed Marine Robin Bush. This has happened a lot. What I've been trying to do, I mean, I can't get rid of the expansion idea. I'm forced to fast expand. I don't know if I'm ever going to get over this or not. But once I fast expand, I just try to, you know, keep an active eye on them and try to either have banelings up or multiple spine crawlers or something to just kill that initial rush. And then I like getting Hydralisks. And I had a lot of success. I mean, the game I played just before this podcast, I did a Hydralisk into a late game Ultralisk.
Yeah.
Which was quite effective. Ultralisks are pretty sweet once you've got the upgrades going. They sort of just run in and just kill the shit out of everything. It's
I
really,
really annoying. The headbutt attack, oh my god, it just demolishes building. I actually just recently played a Zerg vs. Terran against someone, and I had like Mass Ultralis at his planetary fortress, and he probably had 100 SCVs repairing that thing, and it still fell in like 2 seconds. Oh,
that's pretty sweet.
I felt the nerd power, man. But like, go ahead. Your turn.
On a slight tangent, the Planetary Fortress has been really impressing me recently.
Oh, you mean before that game where you found out you couldn't lift him?
Before and after. That particular game was educational in its own right.
I love that one. You built the command center, morphed into a planetary fortress, and it just hung out there, this awkward place by your ramp all game long.
I was just thinking, because I was like, I was really happy with my build. I'm like, yes, I'm going to fast expand. I'm going to make the planetary fortress first and then lift it. And when he attacks it, he's just going to be screwed. And it was perfect. You know, I was not making any screw-ups. I was remembering my supply depots. My money wasn't great. Planetary Fortress upgrade finishes. I'm like, yeah. Then I click it, and I go to click on the lift button, and it's not there. And I, of course, don't notice right away, so I keep clicking. And I'm like, huh, where's the lift button? I better stare intently at it for 5 minutes.
You know,
it doesn't appear to be there. Must be some trick of the light.
Yeah, I really should have done that in one of my Day 9 dailies. You know, I should have been like, now here's a great strategy, which is a defensive planetary fortress on your ramp's high ground, and try to, like, you know, legitimize it as much as possible. And
the worst thing about it is it barely covered the ramp. It just sort of sat there. It like, I mean, if he was like on the far side of the ramp, it probably could hit him. But like, you can't even pass it off as that. It was just sitting in like the worst possible spot, doing absolutely nothing. So I just started making SCVs out of it and like, distance mining. Well, I built another command center, so my fast expand strategy now involved building two command centers, one of which did nothing, and the second of which I did not make another planetary fortress because I felt silly at that point. It was basically the least effective build order I think I've ever done in my entire life.
Did you win that game?
I won.
Oh man, I would have loved it if you like surrounded your planetary fortress with like a bunch of supply depots or upgrading buildings. Just be like, yeah, man, I don't want to lose these, especially not to ground in my main. All right, on a more serious note, for like Zerg vs. Terran, I mean, part of me is just trying to not go roaches because everyone else is going roaches, and I do like getting Hydralis quickly, but I think that I do need to start getting Banelings in between there. I mean, maybe I can get away with it on like Scrap Station where those distances are pretty far, but I think just getting like Zergling Baneling early on and just powering drones sort of gently seems like a reasonable choice.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. The Banelings are pretty sick.
Yeah.
As you demonstrated to me last night.
Hello! You know, one thing that I currently have my computer on the lowest graphics settings because I have a little bit easier of a time parsing what's going on. But when Banelings explode, they literally just disappear. That's the only thing that happens. It's just they're there and they're suddenly not there anymore. And every time I'm watching one of my replays, I actually pause it right before the Banelings get there and set it to Ultra, watch them explode, and then I set it back down to low again. And that's like my one regret for being on the lowest graphics settings.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet to watch your entire entire enemy army just melt in like into acidic slime.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, in that matchup, Zerg vs. Terran, I recently saw a game between Artosis and Moon, where Moon did this, like, really weird Ultra Turtle-style game. Have you seen this?
I did not actually watch it.
Well, okay, so Moon opens up with Reapers, and then techs straight to Thors. He like, Thor rushes. And then he expands, and he's still making some Reapers and a Thor. And he pretty much makes just a handful of tanks, and then goes mass Viking and just Turtles. He hardly expanded at all. He was just going mass Viking, then tank Thor, turret. And I want to emphasize the turrets because he made like a ton of them. And it was sort of weird to see Artosis go just mass air because it seems like that would be the number one thing that would lose to it, but there doesn't really seem to be the best answer Terran-wise to just mass Mutalisks.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've encountered this at all because I haven't made a single Mutalisk in Zerg vs. Terran just because I can't do the old school Mutalisk micro from StarCraft 1.
I honestly haven't had much experience with Butylisks in that matchup. I've lost to it at least once as Terran. Yeah. I probably should try it more as Zerg, but I just haven't. They definitely seem effective. Marines do reasonably well against them, but of course you just have such a huge mobility advantage. You can just abuse that. And the game I lost to them, like, I'm like, well, I have a bunch of Marines. His Butylisk can't do anything to me. But he just picked off my buildings like crazy. And was just generally a pain until I lost.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, I want to move into this micro discussion that's been going on for a while, where people either say that micro is dead and there isn't a lot of micro to do in StarCraft II, that it's all just how you build your stuff, your unit composition, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I don't so much think, I feel like no one should say that that's the case, because I was thinking about the Mutalisk in StarCraft I and just how micro techniques emerge. Because I think right from the start of time, everyone was familiar with the idea of move back the injured unit. You know, mm-hmm. just cycle back your weakened Hydralisks, you know, and that sort of thing. But little things like spreading Marines against Lurkers didn't emerge for a while, I don't think, in StarCraft 1. And especially the way that Mutalisks looked was just... It had nothing to... It looked so weird. It looked so easy for Terran. And one of my favorite examples of this was Cassie versus Chocha in the Shinhan OSL finals. It was their first game on Rush Hour, and I remember watching it live and just thinking, this is one of the awesomest games of StarCraft that I've ever seen. Cassie was doing a really great job of that Medic Marine split micro and everything. And Chocha opened up, went like three hatch Mutalisks or something like that. He maybe got Mutalisks after Lurkers. But he definitely had him in the mid-game. And I remember I recently went back and watched that game, because I remember it just being so tense and so awesome. And the Mutalisks were not stacked. He did not do the trick where you select the Overlord and have supreme control over all the Mutalisks. He was instead had this very spread-out clump of Mutalisks just sort of wandering around the Terran base and really not doing anything. And it was interesting to me to see that game, which I think was not really... It was pretty recent in my eyes. Like, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, 1999 or something like that. It was definitely in the mid-2000s, so I feel like even though there might not be a lot of micro... Or, excuse me, it might not feel like there's a lot of the crazy micro techniques from StarCraft 1 in StarCraft 2 right now, I feel like that they will slowly emerge one at a time until there's some extremely awesome, sophisticated system for controlling stuff. I mean, some of the early evolutions in StarCraft 1 was like figuring out hold position micro with Dragoons. No, actually, at first it was the move back and shoot micro with Dragoons against Zerglings, and then people found out that hold position was a little bit better than attack. That was like a big thing. Or Vultures against Zerglings is pretty new, I think. Probably like 2006 or so, that was like became really, really big.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you have any... I'm kind of going off on my own tangent here, but, I mean, what thoughts do you have about the current micro situation in battles?
Well, I mean, I have a few thoughts. Certainly, I do agree that, like, the current currently there's less micro in battles than in the current state there currently is in Brood Wars. I don't agree at all that there's no micro. I mean, I've lost my share of battles that I had a pretty solid advantage in unit-wise just because I screwed up. I made a poor micro decision, or I didn't micro when I should have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really simple situation. You have a bio army versus a Protoss army with Colossi.
favorite.
Let's assume that your Marines have the combat upgrade, so they'll survive at least one hit, which I think is pretty necessary. Depending on how spread out your Marines are, the Colossi laser is going to be hitting, you know, between what, one in five or six units at a time?
Yeah. I mean,
does it hit more? I'm not even sure how many it can hit.
I don't know if it can hit, like, stacks, you know, like if you have a row of four and then another row of four right behind that. Yeah. I don't know if it can hit the ones in the back. That's something I should probably look at.
But, like, so the Colossi doesn't actually fire that fast relative to the battle, right? It's
going
to get off, you know, let's say six or seven shots in a battle, right? Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, seems about right.
So the difference between each of those shots hitting the maximum number of your units and each of those shots hitting half that many is humongous.
Yeah.
And that's totally up to the micro that you're doing and the micro they're doing. Now, there's a legitimate issue here in that battles are fast, and there's not a lot of room for error because the Colossi are going to kill your stuff so quickly. You don't have a lot of time to do that. But, I mean, just because it's difficult to the time-wise doesn't mean it's not possible. Uh-huh, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't be trying. And it also just, you know, also puts into questions like, okay, where am I picking my battle in the first place? Like, if I'm fighting in this tiny little narrow choke where I can't do that, well, then obviously I'm going to get my ass kicked. But why am I fighting there in the first place?
Yeah.
If I'm fighting someplace where the Colossi can just jump on a cliff, well, that's not going to probably go so well for me. But again,
you know,
maybe I should be pulling back. The decision to retreat your army is, I mean, I think it's a micro decision. It's trying to just sort of spread out properly, maybe hit from multiple angles, get a flank going on. You know, those are all decisions you have to make. And I mean, I just can't, I just don't understand how people think that they don't have an impact on the battle.
Because,
you know, I think it's pretty clear that they do.
Yeah. You know, part of me was actually thinking about the circumstances in StarCraft 1 where super fancy micro is really important. It's like early game rushes, you know, where it's like Zealots versus Zerglings, or getting a vulture into your opponent's base, or, you know, even slightly bigger than that. So if you do some 3-tank, 5-vulture push in Terran versus Protoss, or Mutalisks early on against Protoss or Terran, or even getting Zerglings into a Protoss's base. And as I was thinking, all these situations that are considered classic, you know, standard micro scenarios have tended to be mid-scale battles and lower. Think about the big, large battles in StarCraft 1. You know, like the Terran has all his tanks and vultures sieged up, he has mines down, and the Protoss runs in with this enormous army. There's not that much ultra-subtle micro going on. I mean, yeah, sure, a few Zealots will be running up to tanks and being specifically moved through mines, or that shuttle will be dropping and storming, but for the most part, it's that composition and pre-battle positioning of all your units. Same thing with, like, Zerg vs. Terran. You know, with a lot of the big battles that occur with Muta, Lurker, Ling in the mid-game or something like that. And I don't think anyone would argue that StarCraft 1 doesn't have micro, just looking at those battles. But it's those mid-game battles, like those mid to small-sized battles. And I feel like every single one of those mid-sized attacks that happens, someone thought of after many years of playing. They realized that, hey, I can get away with an attack right now if I just control my stuff really, really, really well. And I feel like when I'm watching StarCraft II, no one is really trying to get away with attacks. I mean, for instance, I know personally, I just try to get away with expansions. but I mean, I was watching some of Insane's game. Do you remember those two Protoss vs. Zergs that we watched?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, Insane pretty much just like hung out until he had this beautiful unit composition, and then he just attacked and won. And I mean, I'm not trying to argue that that's necessarily bad, but the fact that he attacked and won is a direct result of the fact that he waited around for so long. And I feel like that after a while, like maybe in 5-6 months, players are really going to start to have all these standard times where they realize that they can attack super, super early, and as long as they control stuff ultra well, they can pull off these miracle attacks.
Yeah.
My God, I'm long-winded. How long have I been talking? Is that like 5 minutes? Whew. You say some shit, man.
I mean, I generally agree with you. I mean, the other thing we need to keep just sort of think about when we want to make declarations like micro is dead, or, you know, micro doesn't have the depth of StarCraft II, we're sort of, when we say something like that, we're tacitly assuming that we have sort of, that we know everything, right? and I mean, the thing you have to sort of admit to yourself, and this is true of absolutely everyone, that you don't know everything, and you can't know that, like, you can't know if you know everything. You just can't know it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is an unverifiable statement.
Yeah.
So what people, you know, and people are coming into it with a lot of StarCraft 1 knowledge, a lot of what they believe is RTS intuition, and they're like, you know, yeah, it took years to develop this stuff in StarCraft 1, but now we're really smart, so we're going to develop it immediately in StarCraft 2.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's sort of the intuitive leap, which is like really easy to make and seems reasonable, but it, at the same time, it's not definitive at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, the way I look at it is I'm like, wow, you know, imagine every time something new happened in StarCraft 1, like let's say muta stacking, okay? And imagine you could go back in time to like the day before someone discovered muta stacking. And you interviewed a bunch of StarCraft 1 players, they'd probably be like, yeah, you know, yeah, we know pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I mean, like, obviously it's not, you know, they'll be like, yeah, stuff will get tweaked, but no, we know all the big tricks. You know, nothing's going to be revolutionized tomorrow. And they'll be like, and you'll say, why is that? Like, well, we've been playing StarCraft 1 for 8 years. I mean, hundreds of pros have been slamming on it for thousands and thousands of hours. How could we be missing something big?
Yeah,
And then the next day, someone revolutionizes Terran Berserk.
Yeah, that's what I'm planning on doing tomorrow, really.
Yeah.
After I took my coffee. Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think that's pretty good.
And I mean, I don't think it's helpful to sort of get fixated on, you know, stuff like, oh, the micro's not good enough.
Yeah.
Now, that's at the same time, I don't want to come off like, oh, don't criticize, you know, the game of Blizzard or anything like that, because... I mean, definitely, we do need to keep an eye out on it. And there's a flip side to not knowing whether Micro is going to be good, and that's like, maybe Micro won't be good.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't know that it will be. I'm just, you know, I'm only basing this opinion on sort of the past and how StarCraft 1 developed continuously over a very long period of time, despite thousands of very knowledgeable players playing it nonstop. And I don't really see any reason that isn't going to continue.
Yeah.
And in particular, since we're still at the beta stage, and Blizzard is going to be able to patch quite aggressively and has, I'm going to guess, years ahead of them of making balance tweaks and possibly even adding new units.
Uh-huh.
I just think that there's so much potential for tweaking, and there's just so much more to learn about the game that we should, you know, people should spend their energy on sort of that exploration. And they should definitely still give feedback to Blizzard, no question about that. But they should focus on that exploration of this sort of undiscovered space instead of sort of declaring it explored already.
And just giving Blizzard the finger.
Exactly. I mean, that just doesn't do anything. It doesn't help anything. It doesn't accomplish anything. Like I said, I'm just not convinced it's even well-founded.
Yes, seriously. And, you know, like, that's probably the next thing that I'm going to... And by next, I mean, like, in 4 months, once I really start to feel like I have any idea of how it works, you know? Figuring out what the standards of StarCraft 2 are, like, what are good unit compositions in race versus race. Then I'm really going to start trying to play around with aggressive timing attacks and stuff like that. I think a lot of micro tricks will be discovered when players start doing that.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, we've been going for about 45 minutes now, so with that, Tristan and I are going to go ahead and wrap up the TeamLiquid.net StarCraft 2 Beta Podcast, Episode 3. And once again, Team Liquid is hosting their Liquibition on March 13th, the first ever StarCraft 2 one between Rhett and Infernal, and I will be casting that. So, once again, I am Sean Day9 Plot.
And I am Tristan Mantra Brand.
And that is going to be a wrap. See you later, everybody.